This is The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Welcome to Hour 3 of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes. All right, I've got to make a correction. I said the 12th Assembly District was the one vacated by Dora Drake. That's the one vacated by Lakeisha Myers. Dora Drake represented the good people of the 11th Assembly District. Dora Drake is now a four-year state senator, succeeding Lena Taylor. Oh, what do I say about that race? So it became unnecessarily personal and controversial. And it didn't have to be. There was more, I guess, emotional investment in that race than really any other kind of investment. And so what I don't do is I don't shame voters for the choices that they make. Voters make decisions based upon the information that is presented to them and their experiences with either political party, with political agenda, with accomplishment, because each of you have your own reasons for voting, why you vote, and for whom you vote for. I personally believe that the people in the 4th Senate District are going to be in very good hands. I editorialize information. And if there's information that is presented, even if somebody doesn't like it, I have an obligation to share that information, even if somebody doesn't like it. Because if the information was false, faulty, wrong, fraudulent, or inaccurate, then you sue who published it. Wasn't no lawsuit, so I had to figure it had to have been true. Now, I got personally attacked, dragged in the mud over the 4th senators. I was demeaned and disrespected. But here's the thing. If I had the chance to do it all over again, I would have ignored it altogether because I don't live in the 4th Senate District race. My participation in it was essentially zero. But I was essentially blamed for two decisive victories for Dora Drake. And then people who get very limited information, like, well, Dora Drake got a whole bunch of money. That's the point. Let me tell you something. You know who else got a whole bunch of money? Kamala Harris. Why do you think people contributed to Kamala Harris's campaign? Why did some of y'all contribute to Kamala Harris's campaign? Because you believe in her. I know us when it comes to money. We are not giving money or spending money or donating money to something that we don't believe in. And so there was a lot of blame to get thrown around. Remember how I said I was on the Wisconsin State Elections Board, and there was a decision that was rendered that caused a Republican candidate, Mark Green, former congressman, to have to divest himself of the money he had in his campaign account because he raised it when he was a member of Congress, and we didn't allow that. We didn't want that money to influence our election in Wisconsin. So after that took place and the State Election Board was disbanded, I was offered a number of opportunities in the Doyle administration because I essentially voted in a way that caused the State Elections Board to be disbanded. And so a position was offered to me in the Doyle administration. I want you to hang on. I'm going to connect the dots to how what happened in 2006 is relevant to a fourth Senate district race, which it shouldn't be. I think it just shows how people are grasping for straws. Look, everybody has been a part of an election loss. Election losses suck, but they're never the end. But when you look at all the other people and point all of the fingers of why somebody lost, that's ignoring the obvious and not paying attention to the fact that the voters didn't get what they wanted. Don't argue with me, argue with the voters, and you always gonna lose when you argue with them. So when I left the city of Milwaukee in 2007, because I was going to be the minority business enterprise director for the state of Wisconsin. It was an appointed position by Governor Jim Doyle. I interviewed for a bunch of positions. That was the one I selected. So my job in the Doyle administration would have been to make sure that black-owned businesses got their fair share, more than their fair share, of contracting opportunities with the state of Wisconsin. Let me give you one example of how much money can be made. Let's say you're a painter. You're a painting contractor, right? State of Wisconsin operates all 13 UW campuses. What if the dorms at UW Oshkosh, Whitewater, UW Milwaukee, Parkside, and Eau Claire all need to be painted? And you're a painter. That might be a $19 million contract, and you have a black-owned painting business. It would be my job to make sure that you are competitive or to give you that contract so your small painting business can now be one that paints businesses not just in the state of Wisconsin, but in Aspen, Colorado, and in New York City. That was the job that I was going to undertake. So I did something similar for the city of Milwaukee, but I quit the city of Milwaukee, right? And I went over to MMSD for a very brief period of time as like a holding place until I got my appointment from the governor. I already had the job. Here's something I'll never share with anybody, but I think it's time I do so. And we got to put a myth to rest that's been circulating about me for probably a decade. It's the influence that white folks have over our community. This is why we don't ever get no respect, because white folks can plant something in a black person's mind. It stays there forever. Black folks say stuff to us that goes in one ear and out the other. So here's what they said about me. The way the city of Milwaukee was operating its minority contracting arm was faulty. It was cheating black people out of government contracts. So when I accepted the position to be the minority business enterprise director in the state of Wisconsin, I would have corrected and rectified and exposed how black businesses were not getting their fair share of contracting dollars in the city of Milwaukee. Don't know if you know this, but contracting dollars in this city is a good old boys network. Even though there are requirements to give quote unquote small and minority businesses contracting opportunities, there's some white-owned businesses in this city that have been getting the same contracts to fix the roads, to pave the roads, to do the sewer work, to replace the lead laterals for 150 years. And you think that those old money established businesses want to give any part of their opportunity to a black business? Hell no, they don't. So the city of Milwaukee cut a lot of corners and they favored a bunch of contractors so that we were left out. So when I was going to accept the position to be the state minority business enterprise director, I would have rectified that. And I would have exposed a lot of the things that the city was doing wrong. And all this stuff was happening under Tom Barrett's nose. And he didn't know. He didn't care. Tom Barrett had been trying to leave the mayor's office since 2007. He got elected in 2004. So Tom didn't care. Well, when they found out that I was going to go to the state of Wisconsin working for the governor, where I would have exposed the cheating that was going on, I mysteriously got called into the director of MMSD, because I left the city. I went to take a temporary position at MMSD, essentially doing the same thing, minority contracting, until my bell was rung, and then I go and start my job in the state of Wisconsin. I would have moved to Madison and everything. Next thing I know, I'm called into a guy named Jeff Spence, his office. Oh, Sherwin, we have all of your internet records from here at MMSD. I'm like, so? Well, you've been on MySpace. I says, so? MySpace ain't blocked, because most of my days I don't do nothing here anyway. And I let him know. I was like, I'm only here temporarily. MMSD had some contracting irregularities as well that I was going to expose when I was going to accept my new position. So guess what happened? Well, Sherwin, because of your internet usage on MySpace, we're going to terminate you. I said, what now? You going to terminate me? Well, yeah, you sign an internet usage policy. You only use like government websites. You can't go on any kind of website. I said, so you're going to fire me? Yeah, sorry, we got to let you go. I was like, effective when? They're like, now. This is a Friday. I was like, what about my health insurance? Yeah, that's going to be terminated. So I got fired. So I'm like, all right, fine. I'm going to be the state MBE director. Because there were people that didn't, so the Republicans were mad at me. They didn't want me working for the state of Wisconsin. They didn't want me occupying that position where I would have given black contractors their fair share and then some of contracts they were qualified for. The city was very mad at me because I left the city's emerging business enterprise program to go work for MMSD because I was going to, that was a holding place for me until I got my position with the state. But MMSD, they fired me. It's all because of your internet usage. Here's a rumor they started that I got fired for looking at porn on government. Yeah. It's a, and then somebody said I got fired. Oh, this is fantastic. This is even richer. They said I got fired for looking at child porn. If a government employee was looking at child pornography on a government computer, not only would I be under the jail, it would have made the news. They started the rumor to discredit me. So the governor was like, yo, Sherwin, we can't hire you. You were looking at the porn on the government website. I said, you think I'm that stupid, governor? He's like, I'm sorry, but we can't hire you. And that was it. So Michelle Bryant, God love her, got mad at me because I supported Dora Drake. I have my right to support anybody I want to. When I met Dora Drake in the fall of 2019, I supported her then. She's got all the qualifications, but I'm not the only one that think that. Oh, about 65% of the voters in that district think that too. However, clearly it's my fault because I brainwashed all of them. Hell, I wish I had that much power. If that was the case, I'd tell black folks to stop reckless driving and stealing cars. So some of y'all heard what Michelle has said about me on WNOV. Just pure bitterness, anger, and spite. Don't direct that anger at me. Take that passion and bottle it up and put it behind a campaign for your candidate. But if you can't do that, I'll take all the blame. All of it. I've been called worse. So she and I don't know, about a month or so. I'll never speak to her ever again for the rest of my natural life. Ever. And I stand firm on that. Which no loss for her, no loss for me, right? She threatened me. She was like, and I'ma tell people you got fired for watching porn. I actually kind of wish that she did it. I'd have sued her till there was nothing left, but she didn't. Oh, I had lawyers at the ready. But isn't that crazy how like a rumor that started to defame me because I pissed off a bunch of Republicans and I was going to expose how African Americans were being shafted in the government contracting practice. They started a rumor. There was an attempt to regurgitate that rumor about me by another black woman who didn't like my choice in articles that I read on my show and thought that I had an influence on the 4th Senate district election. It also should be known that there was a telephone call that was placed to the Legislative Technology Services Bureau in which someone, and we are trying to figure out exactly who that was, ordered all of the records in the 4th Senate District office be destroyed. And this is all public record. In fact, the Senate Minority Leader was alerted. Her name is Diane Hasselbein. She was alerted that somebody made a phone call that all of the records in the 4th Senate District, all the constituent records, were ordered to be destroyed. Well, you can't do that. That's some Trump stuff, wanting documents to be destroyed. So we found that very, very unusual. And I'm not implicating anybody, but the ethics investigation, of course, will. And this is out of my hands. This is nothing, because whoever did this, I don't think they knew what the implications of this is going to be. And again, I'm not involved. I was just alerted to it like everybody in the media was. Sure, Dan Bice knows, too. That someone or like, why would somebody, like, that's something a Republican would do, right? Like, why would you want constituent records in the 4th Senate District destroyed so that an incoming senator would not have access to that information? Now, ultimately, the documents weren't destroyed. They were preserved. But it just raised a lot of really weird eyebrows. So there was just a bunch of stuff, I suppose, that was going on. But if, you know, me being the scapegoat and being blamed and being defamed and being disrespected is a reason why someone blames an election loss on me, okay, I'm one person. 150,000 people in that district. I played like zero role in that district. Oh, people said, oh, because I'm in love with Dora Drake. I only like white women, but I made an exception for Dora Drake. I took more offense to that than anything else because Dora Drake is like family to me. So is Mark Chambers and my people. In fact, the whole Cogs family, all of them, very good to me, and I'm very good to them. Got a lot of respect for their many years and decades and generations of public service, but it's like everything that I have done, all the sacrifices that I have made, used against me because somebody wants to be angry, bitter, ultra competitive. Fair enough. I respect that. But just small and petty. And ultimately, the voters spoke. Which, let me be clear, I am not one of those voters. LaTanya Johnson is my senator. Let's talk to the caller. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you?
All right, brother. I had tuned out for a little while. First, I want to send my sincere condolences from your brother. I actually got this news from my cousin, who has always been more like a brother, which many of my cousins are, just based on the way my family is structured. So not just myself, but I'm sure Truth Nation as a whole mourns with you for Brother Keon, who I can sincerely say the thing that you hear me say all the time about yourself and some other people like Ernie G. Mr. Bill Taylor will say that all of you guys are positively Milwaukee, and I feel that I hope it is of some comfort that he is with Ernie G, Mr. Taylor, and that the pride that you spoke about him with, I hope that is of some comfort to you, my brother, of all the great things he did in Milwaukee.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for acknowledging that.
Now, to this other thing, if there's anybody who has ever listened to you, they know that, you know, you might be a lot of things, but I would have to say you're an intelligent brother with common sense. You know, you do things that just make sense. You know, you talk about things that make sense unless you're being tongue-in-cheek, and you let us know that you are BSing, you know, when you do that. And so the last thing that anybody should probably accuse you of is looking at porn while you're at work. That, you know, if I were trying to frame you, if I were some deviant trying to frame you, that would be the last thing on the list that I would probably do. So,
with nice. That said, that's
a lot to unpack. You know, like I said, I just tuned in right as you started saying that. And no, MySpace, actually, I don't think even had, you know, the kind of things going on that you see on Twitter, for example. You know, I don't think it was a lot of nakedness. I wasn't on there that much, so I can't speak to it. But from what I heard, because I wasn't into technology early on like that, you know, internet stuff and on a personal level. But, yeah, that's a real weird thing that probably harmed a lot of black businesses and slowed the progress that cities like Atlanta would have had, because yes, you probably would have been there to identify when inequities were faced by black contractors.
It was literally my sole goal, and there were so many people that didn't want me to expose how black businesses and black contractors were being stiffed that they had to find a way to get me fired from my current position with a rumor that was so egregious but believable enough for some reason that the governor couldn't take the political risk and appoint
that you may have too, sir.
Yeah, I mean, but I decided. Here's what's crazy. So I didn't get the appointment, obviously. And then here's the irony of all things. So I left MMSD, tail between my legs, not knowing what I was going to do. And then I went and worked on my very first political campaign, my first major political campaign as a political consultant. A woman by the name of, at the time, State Senator Lena Taylor, who was challenging Scott Walker to run for county executive. So then I went and ended up working for Lena on her campaign, ended up working in her Senate office. And then ultimately it was her and her allies and ended up like trying to burn me now. So it is what it is. You know, that's just the nature of blackness. And while we are our own worst enemy, we're still crabs in a barrel. But if somebody wants to make me the scapegoat for why somebody else didn't win an election, like, I'll take that as a badge of honor, because, like, I live rent-free in so many people's minds that if that's where I'm going to be, then I'll occupy all that space. Hell, I'll vacation in your mind if you let me. Butt naked watching porn.
That's something that we have in common, brother. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you. You too. Appreciate your call. All right. You listen to The Truth for sure. When he was on 101.7 FM. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Don't touch that dial. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com. More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 101.7 The Truth, The Truth app, and 101.7thetruth.com.
Truth Family Fest is back. Our second annual Truth Family Fest, in fact, this Saturday, August 17th at Riverside High School from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. We're bringing the whole community together for a festival that's going to have something for everybody, live music, delicious food, and we're going to give away backpacks. Because, man, Milwaukee loves to give away backpacks to the kids. So mark your calendar for this Saturday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. at Riverside High School for our second annual Truth Family Fest. Truth Family Fest is presented by Associated Bank. Your money works here. And sponsored by Milwaukee Public Schools, Gruber Law Offices, Erie Insurance, American Family Insurance, Outreach Community Health Centers, and the Greater Milwaukee Urban League. And guess what, Truth Nation? Our girl Melanie Ricks is back. Tune into the debut of Nothing But the Truth with Melanie Ricks' new digital show on YouTube. It's going to premiere next Wednesday, August 21st at 6 p.m. Every Wednesday, Melanie will break down the latest in entertainment, sports, pop culture, and all things Milwaukee. Make sure you do not miss Nothing But the Truth, the digital show, Wednesday, August 21st, streaming at 6 p.m. only on 101.7 The Truth's YouTube channel. What's this one here? 101.7 The Truth Street Team, sponsored by the UW Credit Union, is coming to an event near you. Join the Truth Street Team tonight from 5 until 10 p.m. at the Milwaukee Night Market. The Night Market showcases local vendors, performers, and artists. Be sure to stop by our tent right outside the 3rd Street Market Hall on Wisconsin Avenue. The 101.7 The Truth Street Team is sponsored by the UW Credit Union, and they're here for every you. All right. So do all that stuff I just said. All right. Let's talk to Tia. You're on 101.7 The Truth. How are you, Tia?
I'm okay. It's just this conversation that you're having today regarding the certification and what happened with you with that, your former employer. It kind of like just left a sour taste in my mouth because I dealt with a situation for my business where I submitted for a contract and I have several different certifications through the state, MBE, DBE, SBE, and DBE.
Yep.
And I was able to submit for a contract with the state. It was our first contract. I actually won the contract, and it was for procurement for some vehicles. And what happened was, since it was my first contract, I didn't know that I was supposed to have a subcontract agreement with the actual dealership. So with that being said, after that happened, I was calling to check the dealership to find out if they were able to deliver the vehicle so I could find out when I was going to be able to get paid for, you know, my portion of me doing the job and things of that nature. And he said we didn't have a subcontract agreement. And that was his first thing that he said. So I was like, oh, my gosh, like, I messed up. And I got in contact with that department. In short, I got in contact with that department and come to find out, speaking to someone in the state, they told me that they allowed the place to come bid behind me. So I submitted for the bid. Then they came behind and bid behind me, and they ended up winning a contract that I had just submitted for.
Oh, my goodness. So, when was this, Tia? Was this recently or a while ago?
No, it was like, I want to say about 8 months ago.
Okay.
So I've been through, you know, say, going back and forth with them, got in contact with somebody up there that is supposed to be for us, but they're really not for us. And he told me basically I did the job for free. And I'm like, I never worked for free. This was not done for free. I did the research. I got the pricing. I went to the dealership, told them what I was looking for. I have emails between me and the procurement officer and the dealership. Also have an email from the procurement department with me asking, am I able to subcontract on this opportunity? Yes, is what she said. So now it's like, I want to get an attorney, but I can't afford an attorney, but it's a lot of money that was left on the table. It's not a small amount of profit that, you know, that I put, included in this deal. So from your opinion, from what you know about this, what do you think I should do?
Oh, good Lord.
Because the contract. Okay, did you have anything like officially signed from the state of Wisconsin saying that you were the award winner, that you won the bid and the contract was yours, or had it not gotten that far?
So I have an email saying that my company and the dealership won the contract. It's in my email.
Okay.
My name is on there.
I'd actually have to look at it. You potentially can sue, because if you were named, unless
on there.
Right. But unless there was some clause, and I'm sure there was, that disqualified you, because sometimes it's licensing, sometimes it's bonding, sometimes it's insurance, sometimes you got to have a certain amount of money in the bank. There's always like a small detail that we may be unaware of, because they'll award you the contract, but it'll be contingent upon you meeting XYZ, A, B, and C, 1, 2, and 3, and you have 72 hours to submit all that stuff. You probably should talk to a lawyer. Because this is when you get into like government contracting, like this is like super duper legal stuff. But the reason why I wanted to be the minority business enterprise director is so that I could rectify stuff like that. A lot of our businesses don't have all of those additional fine print details, and it shouldn't disqualify them because they're unfamiliar with the process. Because it's complicated on purpose to keep certain small businesses out, because big businesses will just hire somebody to read all the small print and provide all the necessary documents. When it comes to us and our contract, we don't do that, so we're automatically at a disadvantage. But that's why they started a rumor about me, so I couldn't get that job, because I was going to expose it all. So talk to an attorney. I know that's easier said than done.
Yeah, what attorney? That's the problem. I can't find an attorney that's going to help me, because I'm an African-American woman, and who's going to help me?
Well, they ain't going to help you for free now. You probably have to get like a contract lawyer.
I know that. Yeah, I know that. I just need to find a good contract lawyer that won't require like a huge retainer that will take the case on. I don't have a problem getting an attorney.
Yeah.
Because I normally would, you know, I'm the type of person, if I feel like I'm fighting for something, I'll go do it myself. But with this, I can't do it, because so many legal, you know, so much stuff that's going on with this legally that I will miss out. It'll just get thrown out because I didn't use the right terminology or didn't file the right paperwork. Not the timing, because I know how to do research and things of that nature. But this is for a large amount of money. It's $14,000 that's on the table.
So in the meantime, I would say continue to look for contracting opportunities, not just with the state of Wisconsin, but Milwaukee County, the city of Milwaukee. And if I'm not mistaken, if you have a woman-owned, minority-owned business, if you are certified in the state of Wisconsin, you can bid on federal Department of Transportation projects too. Now, because the dollar amount is $14,000, I don't even know if it's worth pursuing, because your legal bills would probably amount to that much. So eventually, if you got an award, you got a judgment, it wouldn't be for several years anyway. Continue to bid on contracts. Follow all the necessary steps, and if it happens to you again, then you will have a legitimate lawsuit. But yeah, $14,000 is.
Okay, yes.
I know that's a lot of money to you, but like in the grand scheme of things, but like multi-million-dollar contracts, that your legal fees would eat that up. So yeah, you'd win your judgment. Yeah, we owe you $14,000, but your lawyer would be like, "That'll be $13,500, please," and it might not be worth it.
Right, and see, that's what I'm doing. I haven't stopped. I continue to bid on all opportunities. I'm registered on SAM.gov. Like, I do a lot of, like, when it comes to government contracting, I'll bid in other states and everything. I attend a lot of events, so I'm getting a lot better at it. But I just make sure that I have the right documentation. Now, they got me once, but they can't get me again.
There you go. They ain't going to get you again.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. No, not again. They got me once.
All right.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
You're welcome, Tia. Tia finna get a big old contract. I thought our contract was like $7 million. And I say that because, so Tommy Thompson actually passed this law, a Republican. This is back in probably 86, I think he passed this law, where 5% of the Wisconsin either state budget or overall contracting dollars have to go to either black-owned firms or minority-owned firms. Let me just give you a snapshot of how much money that is. The biennial budget, I'm going to use round numbers, is $80 billion. meaning $400 million has to go to black and or minority owned business, has to by state law. The requirement is 5%, which doesn't sound like a big percentage. We're also talking about $80 billion. So that's like $400 million, right? Like $500 million, which is big money to be split amongst African-American owned businesses. I'm sure her $14,000 contract was a small slice of that overall pie of $400 million. In all of the years since that, it's a state law now, meaning if the state of Wisconsin does not allocate 5% of either its contracting dollars or its state budget to black owned and minority owned businesses, they're in violation of state law. That was a law that was signed by Tommy Thompson back in the 80s. Since that law was signed 38, almost 40 years ago, do you know how many times the state of Wisconsin has met their obligation to pay minority and black owned businesses that 5%? Zero. With me being MBE director, not only would black and minority owned businesses in the state of Wisconsin have gotten their 5%, because there's no ceiling on how high it can go, they may have gotten 10. So they had to start a rumor about me so I couldn't get the job. And it's sad to see that some Negroes even to this day are trying to use that against me. You know who really started circulating that rumor even after it like had died down? Orlando Owens. Y'all remember him? The Republican, the black Republican that never has a home. He always runs for office and always loses and never been supported by the Republican Party. So he used to feed people that rumor because he got mad at me. Oh, if y'all knew, I'm going to write a book one day. The pettiness in like certain segments of black Milwaukee, that's probably a reason why we're so stagnant. Because black folks, like, I think we're the only group of people that hate to see another black person's progress. Everybody wants everybody else to be down in the gutter with them. Like they don't like somebody excelling. I once said that I outgrew WNOV, and a lot of people have. That's why damn near everybody quit. Sandra Robinson quit. Homer Blow quit. Keon quit. Keon loved WNOV. Carolyn Spinks quit. They all quit. I left because I wanted to pursue other opportunities, and that was used against me too. You know what else she said? I ain't going to say her by name because I'm not going to give her that justification. She said that she was the reason why I got CNN interviews. Let me tell you what's crazy. So she was supposed to be out of town when CNN had reached out to have a conversation with her. When I did the interview, she was in town. They had her telephone number. They didn't have mine. When CNN reached out to me, they had to go to one of my Facebook pages and reach out to me, because the one that said that they, you know, gave me or gave CNN my name and my information only gave my name. And here's what's crazy. CNN always had her number. They always could have called her, but they didn't. But I'll take the blame for that, too. And I rather enjoyed those conversations with CNN. In fact, I'm still in contact with those CNN folks probably once a week. Like all that petty nonsense and all that overwhelming emotional stuff that should have been channeled into something productive got aimed at me. But I take it. I take it. All right, Zach, I got to take a commercial break.
Wait, before you do, her contract was actually for $205,000. $14,000 was like what she was supposed to be taking.
Yeah, but it's still unfortunately $14,000 though. I want her to restructure her billing, because if it's a $200,000 contract, well, I guess that's not even 10%. Okay, so when minorities are designated contracts, I got to take a break. I can't really talk about this now. But when minorities are designated contracts, so anytime a government agency awards a contract to somebody for services or for products, let's say the Office of Department of Administration in the city of Milwaukee needs computer paper, and I happen to be a distributor of computer paper. Because it's a minority designated contract, I don't have to be the lowest bidder. But in every other category, when governments are seeking bids and RFPs, they legally have to take the lowest bidder unless it's a minority requirement, meaning minorities can skyrocket their prices a lot of times because we don't have the infrastructure, we don't have the staff, we don't have the necessary payroll. So they allow us to inflate our prices instead of us having to be the lowest priced person. But that's something that you learn once you like get more versed when it comes to government contracts. Okay, now I'm going to take a break. The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
The Truth with Sherwin Hughes returns after this on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. You are listening to The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
Always do the same dance whenever the song is played. It's some old school roller skating music. All right. Vanessa said, "Let it go, sure, when you're up." No, I just don't like when, like, people that have an obligation to inform our community, they have like a beef and a vendetta with one person because they don't have anything of substance to talk about. They can't blame the fact that they were phony and they were faulty and they were fraudulent. And so they want to put all that on one person, which absolves them from responsibility. It's one thing that I hate. If you lose, you lost. Blame everybody else you want to, but at the end of the day, the result is the same. I kept my mouth shut for a very long time because I just was so just like totally disrespected. And I think that person may continue to bring up stuff and it's not going to change the result. It's not, but I'll shoulder the blame for it. That puts me in an incredibly powerful position. And I like that. I like when my name be in that mouth. You know how sometimes people say, keep my name out your mouth. No, I love it. I love controversy. I love it. Keep talking about me. I'm used to it. I've heard so much. Oh, I've been called gay. That's the interesting one. Because in our community, and it's rich that was a rumor that was ever circulated about me. Because do y'all have any idea how many closeted gay people there are occupying every single sphere of our community? But the first thing they'll do is say, oh, so-and-so is gay. Because they want to put the focus and the attention on somebody else. Like, how is being gay a slur? Right. If I was gay, I'd be the best gay. I would take all your men. I'd take all of them. I'd be the best gay I'd be so gay that the gays would want to get rid of me. They're like, he's too good at this. But I've heard everything about me. It's just when people, when they don't have anything else to talk about, they talk about people. Those that can do. Those that can't, talk about the people that do. Let that guide you. Those that can do. Those that can't, talk about the people that do. So if they, whoever they are, choose to talk about me personally, they are literally telling you that they have nothing else. Because if they did, that would take precedent over talking about another human being. There's like a whole bunch of euphemisms and sayings. Only small minds talk about people. Big minds talk about ideas. Big minds talk about business. Small minds and immature minds talk about people. We don't do gossip here. This is not what the show is. The Breakfast Club. You get all gossipy and petty and all that other stuff. Dora Drake gets 12,630 votes, or 62.42% of the vote. Lakeisha Myers gets 7,605 votes, or 37.58% of the vote. You know, there's a hostility that exists amongst some people because they're just, and I get it, right? Because people that are hurt other people, and if they have a bigger platform, then they just try and cause more hurt because they want more people to like sympathize with them. But everybody knows that hurt people, that's what they do. Cause they're very good at it. They're not very good at solving their own problems or rectifying their own issues, but you know what they can do? They can hurt other people as best they possibly can, which ultimately still leaves them hurt. Right. Cause they're not addressing what the actual issue is. It is what it is, I suppose. But I guess let that guide your thinking and your listening when you hear somebody, you know, make it about another human being. So I'd like to put that whole thing to rest. Bridges have been burned. Things have been said that can't be taken back. And so we're going to move forward. I believe the people of that Senate district, they would have been in good hands either way. You know, this was never about the challenger candidate, never. But I know that if I create a hostile environment for a political candidate, I want y'all to hear me good now. if we as talk show hosts create hostile environments for political candidates and then have the nerve and the audacity and the unmitigated gall to say, they won't come talk to me. Why should they? Nobody needs to walk into a hostile environment when it's about the voters and it's about policy and it's about moving our sad, dying, helpless community forward. Here's something else that we do, and I probably shouldn't say this, but I am. Us talk radio hosts, when it comes to politics and it comes to winning elections, we overstate our importance. Sometimes we get, our egos get so big, and y'all have accused me of this too. I oftentimes got to check myself. Because like you talk to people, oh, Sherwin, we love what you do, and we listen to you every day. And I told my mama about you and my cousins, and the people in Nashville listen to you. And oh, Sherwin, I'm calling from New York. Like eventually, like that boosts your ego. But I got to realize this is just, these are the people that listen and that like me. There's a whole bunch of people that don't listen, don't know who I am, don't like me at all. But when you constantly hear from the people that listen to you, like your head gets really big. And so what we do with that inflated sense of self is we think that we have a lot more power and a lot more influence than we do. Talk radio right now in 2024 has almost no influence on elections. I'm going to say that again. This is somebody who's been doing talk radio for all told 15 years. It has almost no influence, but the talk radio show hosts believe that they have this incredible amount of power to get folks elected. It look at the election results, look at who got a disproportionate amount of time, unpaid for time, on talk radio, and it amounted to literally nothing. You know what has influence over voters? Talking with them, showing up at their door, knocking on their door and having engaging conversations, meeting voters where they're at. So all we do a lot of times, y'all, is blow hot air. Sometimes my air is cool. I blow cool air sometimes, but we just blah, 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 blah. And I love y'all so much for listening because sometimes we just go on and on and on about nothing. And I've been accused of that. Not often. I usually got something to say. But I think we have an inflated sense of self, meaning that, oh, if this candidate doesn't come on my show, they're not going to win. Sometimes if this candidate doesn't come on your show, they're going to win by damn landslide. Now, I engage the handful of elected officials that I talk to because there's something that they're doing and I want you all to know about, because too many of us, especially black folks that are dependent upon good public policy, we always say, oh, our elected officials aren't doing anything. And you will continue to think that unless we actually hear from them. But you're not going to hear from everybody. I don't have the obligation to talk to every single person running in every single race. I don't have the obligation. None of us do. But I think a lot of times we overstate our importance. If a political campaign never ran another radio ad ever, if you had the next set of campaigns that roll around, they didn't run a single radio ad. I assure you, had they run radio ads, there'd be almost no difference in the election. I know I shouldn't say that, but what radio does is it supplements how many doors you knock on, how much direct mail you send, how many canvassers you have knocking on doors and dropping off literature. It's like 10 different things. Radio is maybe a tenth of it, meaning if you eliminate a tenth of your campaign strategy, you're still going to win. We just like to like bully people and intimidate people because if we feel weak and powerless in our own lives, like there's a platform where we think we have a tremendous amount of power. But there's a tremendous amount of responsibility that comes with that power that some of us just don't understand. So take a break, come back and talk to Norm. I have a feeling that like I'm not done talking about this, that it's going to get bloody before, even though it's over, right? It's over. The election is over. Bunch of people won, bunch of people lost. They'll be back at it again. God bless them. I hope they come back. You know, sometimes it just doesn't work out for you. And the next time you learn more in a campaign loss than you do in a win. Because when you win, you think you did everything right. When you lose, you know you got to go back to the drawing board, restructure everything, reorganize, reanalyze. And that is where great learning comes in. This is also more motivation for me to do the campaign training school. Okay, The Truth with Sherwin Hughes will be right back.
More of The Truth with Sherwin Hughes is next on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com. It's The Truth with Sherwin Hughes on 1017 The Truth, The Truth app, and 1017thetruth.com.
All right, let's talk to Norm. Hello, Norm. How are you doing, Norm?
What's up, my brother? How you doing, man? How you doing, my brother?
I'm doing better today. Thank you.
Oh, man, I know it's rough, man. Rest in peace, Keon, man. You did a beautiful job, Keon. Nice job, brother. You did good here. Hey, man, I got a comment about Dora Drake. I think I'm saying her name. Well, you know who I'm talking about.
Yes.
She is easy on the eyes, but it's more to that. She is pretty, but that ain't got nothing to do with nothing. I got a friend in Milwaukee. She had like 50 people in her little clique, and they starting to backstab her. Milwaukee black people is funny like that. You got to have a real short clique that you really kick it with, because everybody ain't going to like you. My grandmama told me that 40 years ago. Peace, brother.
Thank you, Norm. Appreciate your call. And I don't want to have to bring that stuff up, but y'all need to understand, like, certain people. And I, as a black man, I don't comment much on what black women do, because I'd lose the debate to them because they'd all gang up. Women hate pretty women. They hate them with a passion. I don't know what it is. I don't hate handsome men. It does me no good. So, oh, look at him in his suit. I hate him. I think I'm going to drag his name through the mud. If anything, well, hey, brother, you look sharp today. Now, where you get that suit at? Is that one of them Donald Trump ties? Look at you. Go ahead, brother. But especially when it comes to colorism, dark-skinned black folks hate light-skinned black folks with long, pretty hair, and women are no exception. They hate them, and it's disgusting because I know where that came from. Usually the same white folks that try to start rumors about me, and we just eat it up. It's so disgusting. It's so unbecoming of us. We should know better. The colorism does their bidding for them, and we hate one another because of the lightness or the darkness of our skin. Like, that sickens me. That's pathetic to me. But then again, if you ain't got nothing else to talk about somebody. Like, that is one of the worst and most egregious things. And that's the thing. Like, pretty women, and we know pretty women, because pretty women occupy a place in society that is very specific. Handsome men, like, occupy a place in society, too. But still, a handsome man can have his career canceled in a second if he says the wrong thing, or if he's a creep, or... Right. If he sexually assaults or sexually harasses a woman, don't matter how handsome he is, he's done. But pretty women, they almost live in an alternative reality. And I'm not speaking specifically about any one woman. I'm talking about someone who is just like extraordinarily God gifted, gorgeous. They don't do Botox. They don't wear a lot of makeup. They don't even work out. They're just beautiful. You ever have a conversation with a woman who is just so incredibly beautiful, how she just lives in an alternative universe? And you know, the kind of people that I'm talking about, they're like almost out of sight gorgeous, like supermodel gorgeous, right? They're just perfect in every way. And women who occupy that rung of society, they're just like, everybody is so nice to me all the time. I went to Starbucks and somebody opened the door for me and another person bought my coffee for me. And then I needed something fixed on my house and just a whole bunch of guys, and they redid my roof and they redid my siding and they did all my tuck pointing. I didn't even have to pay them. Like, pretty women have, like, they have, like, this attitude about the world. Like, everybody is wonderful because everybody treats them like they're above everybody else because of their beautiful. And, you know, sometimes even women do that, too. There was a particular woman that I dated who, let's just say, it didn't work out for other reasons, but it wasn't because of how she looked. My God, she was just one of the most beautiful women I had ever seen. She was so beautiful. Like, she was, like, above most human beings. I don't even know what the hell she was doing with me. Actually, let me take that back. I deserve beautiful women. Like, I remember me and her went to Panera to get us some food. And the woman who was working, an older black woman, just stopped working and just sat down next to her and just started talking to her. Like, that kind of stuff. She and I would go out to dinner. Women would come, oh, my God, you're so beautiful. Your hair, look at your dress. When you occupy, like, that level of beauty, really confident women will compliment other beautiful women. Sad, hurt, low self-esteem, probably victims of abuse themselves, hate pretty women because they think it's unfair that they have that advantage of being beautiful that they will never have. And it's mostly because those people that demean pretty women are ugly on the inside. Thank you guys for listening. Rest in peace, Keon Jackson Malone. I'll see y'all next time. Cinco, cinco, cinco. Salito lindo. Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. The whole ballot.